This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.
Have mercy, Mr. Attitude, Eric Wiltshire.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Pop Bread with Coughing Lee Banks and Eric Wiltshire over here in Pop Bread. As promised, we're back with an old name that's coming back. Only it's being given
strange,
away. Time Out magazine, which, do you know, I don't think I've ever bought a copy of it. I've only ever seen it in The Doctors or The Dentist. But it used to sell hundreds of thousands of copies as a paid-for magazine.
And it was 300,000, wasn't it, a week?
Yeah.
Which was good. That means it got a readership, because it had a high readership of in excess of about 1.2 million.
I love journalists and PR people.
We'll discuss radio listenership if you wish.
Yeah, it's ones.
One.
What? One.
One. One. We've got one now, have we?
We've got one.
We've lost them all. Yeah. That's because we went to the Olympics.
Well, apparently, from September. That's right, pardon me. From September, the Time Out magazine will be free in London, but you poor suckers over in New York and Paris are going to have to pay for it.
No, I can't see a problem with that, really.
Yeah, well.
Because it's a marketplace that is, but in London, Time Out at the beginning of time used to be a really good magazine.
Did it?
And it had some really high quality writers on it and used to turn out some really good stuff. But ultimately it became what it describes itself as, a listings magazine, which is not a lot of talent goes into producing a listings magazine.
I have to be careful with that one.
Why?
Because a friend of mine still does it for a magazine.
Listings, it depends what you sort of thing you're listing. You can do it in a creative way and make a difference with it. But generally, a listings magazine in the style that Time Out did it was just a load of free ads.
Oh, right.
But the foreign editions, like in Paris and New York, it has an element of sophistication and charm. Yeah, and they're rich in Paris and New York. Let them pay.
Ouch. Complaints to Lee G. Banks in the middle of England.
I've got hundreds of them. Just keep them coming, ladies and gentlemen.
Sky has been saved by the internet. Reason being that Sky's movie position was actually challenged by the Competition Commission in the UK. For those outside the UK, Sky TV is a digital satellite broadcaster. And many, many, many years ago, they decided to show films, the Hollywood blockbusters, ahead of normal TV by making it a subscription service. And somebody said, that's not fair, they've got a dominant position. No, they haven't.
There's nothing wrong with a dominant position.
Absolutely not. And when this thing started, I suppose in some ways, the assessment that was being looked at the time was kind of leaning towards agreeing. But since then, you've got Love Films, Netflix, and loads of other ones that have come on via the internet. So you can be a subscriber of Netflix or Love Film, and you can download the latest blockbuster movies, often before even Sky have got them.
Well, I think that's true, and I think it's become a major problem for a lot of TV companies. If you watch TV, particularly in the UK, the standard of entertainment and of news and everything has plummeted onto all time lows, and so things like Netflix and stuff like that are taking off because there's nothing else to watch on TV apart from Emmerdale and Coronation Street.
Well, I was actually looking through the BBC iPlayer the other day and saying to myself, how much would I watch if I could?
Yeah.
I was struggling.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the major joys of watching TV now is to see how you can beat the adverts by flicking from one channel to the other.
Now, that's not the BBC, dear. They don't have adverts.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I a bassoon? Did I not know that? Was I just making a comment made a cheap jibe at?
I mean, I was looking through, and there were so many arty, highbrow programmes on the BBC.
No, they're not. That's the complete and utter fallacy. It's lowbrow, shallow rubbish that the BBC's putting out, just like the rest of the TV channels. We want highbrow. We want intelligent. We want challenging programmes.
I didn't see. I mean, I actually clicked on the button, because you can click on the buttons, you see, but you can't watch. So I click on the buttons for comedy and find five programmes.
What, man?
That's all the what. I can't tell you the names, I can't remember. But they had five comedy programmes across all four TV networks.
And I bet they were all really old.
One of them was Dad's Army.
That's pretty old.
Yeah. And then I went to entertainment.
What about Mrs. Brown? Why didn't they boost Mrs. Brown? That is the funniest thing on television now. And nobody ever talks about it anywhere.
Well, no, they won't do, because they're all journalists and they want to have stupid things on. Which reminds me, I've got to mention very quickly, sorry about this, boys and girls, BBC We Say No, the campaign that RTI has started to keep BBC local radio stations on air because the BBC want to close them. And just out of interest, this week has come out the official audience figures for the radio stations in the UK. You will find them on...
These are the digital figures, though, aren't they?
No, includes the ordinary ones. And on the BBC We Say No page, I've put them there. And when you think of the money the BBC wastes on stupid concerts from people who nobody's ever heard of and never will do on BBC Radio 3, it hasn't even got half the audience of BBC locals and probably cost 10 times more. And then you go on to the national talk station, and that hasn't got as many listeners as the BBC locals either. So my suggestion to the BBC is shut Radio 3, shut 5 Live down, and keep BBC locals. Because obviously more people want that. And it's only you stupid people that can't see it.
Can I just say something to the people who do BBC local radio? You actually could help yourself survive by actually getting off you that A word that Harry was allowed to use and I wasn't, and doing something interesting. Because of my burgeoning interest in the Olympics, because I've never been interested in sport, but because of our involvement in the Olympics, I've been monitoring the coverage of the Olympics, and I've been listening to it on local radio. And the problem is, lads and lassies and whatever else you are, your coverage of the Olympics was anodyne, cheap, and boring. Make your programmes interesting, then you make our job a lot easier to keep you on the air.
Oh, do you know what else the BBC's done?
What?
During the Olympics, most people outside the UK can't listen to local radio stations anymore.
Why?
Because I presume they're using the bandwidth for 5 Live or something.
Really? That is despicable, because not everybody cares about the Olympics. I didn't care about the Olympics until last week.
Oh, I just despair at times to think of a wonderful organisation being ruined. Madonna says booze at the Paris gig were just a few thugs. There's a problem, Auntie Madonna.
Yeah?
People who went to the gig don't agree with you, and they've put messages on Twitter and things saying, unfortunately, at the end of the show, after I left the stage, a few thugs who were not my fans rushed to stay pretending to be angry fans, says Madonna.
Right.
One of her fans said, I've been a fan for 20 years, and I booed Madonna at the Olympia 45 minutes for €275. Shame on you.
Well, that's what she got paid, €275 to boo Madonna for 45 minutes. That's pretty good.
She had to pay for €275.
How much is that in real money? That's about 220 quid, isn't it?
€275.
Just ignore me then.
For 45 minutes is disgusting for a ticket.
Well, it is. But I have to say something here, because I did actually witness part of this. Not because I was there, because I was an Olympian. But I witnessed part of this. And there is a trend that has started over the last 5 years, where booing at a concert is a good thing. You boo to register your admiration for the artist. I felt that as this started, that's exactly what was happening. I've seen it at a lot of concerts. When I was being a music writer, I've seen a lot of concerts. And I think that started off. And what actually happened, there were a few people who jumped on the bandwagon and made it a negative thing when it was actually possibly a positive thing.
Well,
just thought I'd chuck that in.
Well, yeah, but there's another person's tweeted, Madonna has blamed
Rome. That's two tweets!
Yes. Madonna has blamed rogues attending her concert at the Olympia without understanding that her fans feel cheated. And I've got to be honest, if I'd paid €275 for a ticket, I'd want more than 45 minutes out of it.
That's about £220, ladies and gentlemen. £220 to go to a concert is a ludicrous amount of money.
Especially for 45 minutes.
If that's all she did. Bob Dylan did in 1969 at the Isle of Wight, actually did 40 minutes, but we're only paying a fiver.
Yeah, well, that was a long time ago. Armed police storm Miley Cyrus's house. My teeth aren't working. Miley Cyrus's house after some idiot, made what is called a swatting phone call to police. Swatting phone call.
Yeah. No, tell me that. Explain what a swatting
phone call. Well, apparently this is the name used for prank phone calls, which has been dubbed swatting.
Right.
What they do is they phone up the police, you know, with an emergency call about kidnapping or shooting or something like that.
Oh, right. I know what you mean now, yeah.
Right. The police go blasting out to this house to find out that there's not even anybody in the building.
Yeah.
And some idiots think this is funny. Now, I'm sorry. If you live in America, as many of you do, and you know somebody that's joking about doing swatting, phone the police up and drop them in it.
Yeah.
Because it might be that one of these idiot swatting callers makes a call just at the time when there's a real accident taking place and the police are sent to the wrong people where there's no real harm and they, you know, can't get to a real serious car accident or, as you call it in America, a fender bender.
Fender bender? Yeah. That's like a gender bender. What to do with cars?
Sort of. And I just find that so horrendous that anybody would do that just to sort of get the police or the fire services to go to the wrong places. Prank calls to emergency services deserve prison sentences. End of.
I think you're quite right. And there used to be a rule in the British press where it was at the time of the when Ireland was bombing Britain. And there were lots and lots of prank calls about bombs, bomb scares.
That's right, yeah.
And actually, for the first time, the press put a ban on news coverage of bomb scares.
Mm.
And in this sort of case, because people think it's funny, inexplicably think it's funny to do this kind of thing.
It's not funny.
I think it's wrong.
Yeah. It's just not funny.
Very briefly, have you heard about these emails that are flying around?
No.
You know, these conning emails where they write to you and say, I am the queen of Siam.
Yeah.
I need to get £10,000, $10 million out of my bank and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
There's one going around now, and I think this person who's doing this should be found, and I can't say shot because of the content, but something despicable should happen to them, because it's going around. It's saying, I am a secret service, a member of the Secret Service. We have found elements that you are about to be assassinated. We can stop this, but we need to get out. Yeah, I think that is horrendous.
Yeah, I think there's a need for a good spam trap. I don't get any of those.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is equally as despicable.
Absolutely.
Where a shopkeeper cons somebody into handing over their lottery ticket. Lee's investigate this one. So over to you, mate.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, Farak Nazir. This cold couple, she was called Maureen Holt, and she's 77 years old. And she came in to have a lottery ticket looked at. The bloke put it in his machine, realised it was £1 million winner, screwed it up and threw it away, says, nah, nothing on that duck. And they believed him. They believed him. He actually then went to Camelot to try and make the claim himself.
Mm-hmm. So how did Camelot find out then?
They realised, I don't understand the technicalities of it exactly, but they realised that there had been a double claim. I think when it went through the machine the first time and showed it was £1 million winner, it must have activated some sort of device at their offices. And then for it to be brought in again, activated something. I really don't know. And don't push me on it because I'll burst into tears. But they found out, right?
Mm.
And he's caught. He's admitted it. His family's turned against him. He comes from Oldham in Greater Manchester, which is originally roughly where I come from. And believe me, there are some scallywags and some kikes and bad people around that area. But I don't think he's any as bad as this bloke. Let's name him again, Farrakh Nazir.
Well, apparently she bought the ticket near, or bought it from a Tesco shop and paid for it with a club card, which, yeah, of course, messed it all up because he didn't have the same name as Maureen, did he?
See what you're doing? You see what he's done, ladies and gentlemen? He's allowed me to continue rambling while he checks out Aldi Carton.
No comment. this next story I just find a little bit sort of, I don't know, it's a bit like rubbing sandpaper on my arms. It hurts a bit.
It's a funny one. A funny story, this.
I
know where you're coming from.
Yeah, I have great sympathy for the people, and I just wish the aid would go there. North Korea is looking for immediate food aid after the terrible floods that took place in the northern sector of Korea. And so North Korea has now gone to UN officials asking for food aid urgently. For the people there, I have every sympathy, so don't slag me off for that.
Mm.
But the other day on the television, there was North Korea firing off military rockets, which could be, I don't know, fitted with all sorts of weapons on the top end. And when you fire these things off, they cost huge amounts of money. They've got huge amounts of tanks and helicopters and all this sort of stuff. Well, come on, Mr. North Korean government, don't buy so many military things and go on the open market and buy your citizens some food.
I think what you're saying is right, Eric, and I can't object to it greatly, but I do think, for once, I must be the voice of temperateness.
And, really?
And yeah, because I understand what you're saying. As I say, and I agree with you, if you're going to start bombing everybody and buying bombs and tanks and all sorts of weapons, yeah, you should be looking to your morals. But there is a simple fact here that the wells have been destroyed by the fluids. You know, there's sewage in the wells and stuff like that. And if it is often quicker to get foreign aid into your country than actually get the aid that might be available to you there. And it's
okay,
at that
I'll
point...
that. I'll buy that, yes.
Yeah, at that point then, you know, after the events, after we've rescued these people and protected their lives, then maybe then is the time to be saying to Korea, well, all right, we've spent X amount, £100 million on aid to help your people out. Stop buying some bombs and pay us back. Then we've still got the aid to give to people who aren't buying bombs, dear.
Well, that's... Yeah, okay, I can relate to that. Yeah, it makes sense. I do feel sorry for the people out there. Seriously, I
agree,
do.
Yeah. But yeah. No, I think what you're saying is reasonable.
But then, to see all these military devices being shown off and then firing rockets off and having a Barney with South Korea, I don't buy into that. Anyway, we wish the people, the citizens of North Korea, every success in getting better soon. The US is resisting any changes to control of the internet, thereby passing that control to the United Nations. And I have to say, I agree.
I know you do. And I can't agree with it one iota. Why should America, why should the US have control of the biggest tool, unless you consider the biggest tool available to this world, and also what is potentially one of the biggest weapons, why should they have control of that when it's a worldwide phenomenon?
Let's just start with the first bits. The internet was started between two universities in America.
Yeah.
They dreamt it up.
Yeah.
So they dreamt up a product in the same way as, what's his name, Mr. Dyson, dreamt up his special Dyson machine.
Yes.
And now somebody else is saying, well, I like that ball. I want to play with it as well.
Yeah.
They can't.
Well, it can, because it's a worldwide commitment now. The internet has been committed to the world, and every aspect of your life and your culture, rightly or wrongly, is now on the internet.
But do you think that the US government owns it then?
Pardon?
Do you think the US government owns it?
Well, the body that operates it, what they call, I can't remember what they call now. I can, yeah, that's it. Or did you mean I can remember and you can't?
No, I can, yeah, go on. Because, I'll tell you,
they
what,
operate at arm's length from the US government, right?
No,
just logical.
No, but
they do it under the remit of the Department of Commerce. Now, that again is something that worries me slightly.
Right, well, let me just clarify this a bit, because I think it's something like 10 years ago, Lee, and I can't remember exactly the date, but there was a furore about this before. And so what the American... Because originally it
I
was...
I could have done a Ferrari joke then, you know.
I know. Originally, it was under the control of the American government, as rather like an agency, for want of a better term.
Yeah.
Now, what they did to appease everybody is they said, right, then, we'll change ICANN, which is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. We'll change it over quite happily to a not-for-profit, an NGO, right? A non-government organisation.
Yeah. But so it's within the Department of Commerce, and that seems to smack of making a profit.
Well, no, it doesn't. It's not allowed to do that. Where the profits come in is, for example, BT can sell you internet bandwidth, and that's what they do. They don't get involved in that
side. And Google can make billions out of selling
advertising. Absolutely. And the actual ICANN have nothing to do with that. What they have and what they do is, for example, they will... And I'll give you a perfect example. Anybody in the world can buy a .co.uk web address.
Yes.
Anybody in the world.
Yes.
You, Mr. Banks, because you don't live here, you're not allowed to have a .sk one.
Yeah, fine.
You can't buy one. But you can't buy one, even if you wanted it.
Right, okay.
Because
they're
only issued to .sk citizens and or those that live here, have residency, blah, blah, blah.
Quite right. And so why should America own it?
Well, that's my whole point. Because there are different agencies all around the world, in the UK it's called Nominet, for example.
Nominet,
don't be rude. And they all have voting rights into ICANN. And therefore,
I cannot.
You are taking the mic. It basically means it is totally and utterly democratic. Now, if you stick...
No, it isn't democratic if the Americans own it. How can it be democratic? They're not. They're liberal democrats. They're all sorts of democrats except democratic.
But if you put it into the United Nations, and I'm sorry to be dragging up Syria at this point, and I'm not making a political point. Currently, we know the atrocities that are going on in Syria, and yet... The United Nations, which is where they want this the entire internet to be controlled, can't make a decision on something because China and Russia have blocked the different proposals that have come through from Kofi Annan, who's actually resigned this week over it as well, because they can't come up with a decision. So if you then put the internet into that same scenario where one country can block something happening, it is going to be a nightmare when new technology comes out.
But that can happen anyway.
No, it can't.
Well, there's lots of places block the internet.
No, that's up to them. They block it, but ICANN doesn't block it. And ICANN as an NGO, it has different bodies from around the world that are appointed to the country who then vote on things. You try and put it through the UN, if every country in the world barring England wants something and England says no, it's like having the old-fashioned French veto in the EU. It won't happen.
Well, I can see what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying, but what I'm actually saying to you is that if you think about it, what's the worst? It's the devil in the deep blue sea, isn't it? Mm. What's worse, having a democratic voting system within the UN that helps you decide what you want and there's all the negotiations and lobbying goes on, or having one warlike nation, the biggest, most warlike nation in the world, in charge of one of the most dangerous bombs?
Well, the truth is, if you want to complain about a service on the internet, you can do so via Nominet in London. Yep, serious.
Yeah.
If it's under the control of the United Nations, can you imagine getting hold of the UN and doing anything?
I'm not saying that the UN is the perfect device for this. I'm just saying that we should be looking quite seriously at the internet as this powerful tool and this thing that is only going to get bigger and bigger and stronger being controlled. And I'm sorry if I've upset people in America, but you do go to war a bit. Just like England, we are a warlike nation as well. We're silly because we're so little. But you are in control of something which is terrifyingly powerful.
Lee, they're not in control.
They are in control.
No, they're not.
It says, ladies and gentlemen,
I've just proven it to you.
The US has confirmed it would resist efforts to put the internet under the control of the United Nations.
Yeah, because nothing would ever get done. I was nearly going to say a country there, and I won't. But as I said to you before, the rules within, and I've been involved in the rules in the UK and the changes that have been made. And I'll give you another example. When there was a decision made by ICANN to make the details of web owners available to the public, because what they were trying to do was stop people cyber-sitting sites who shouldn't really have them, and also enabling people who wanted to make a claim against them to be able to do so. Now, that sounds great in theory. The trouble is, if, you know, Auntie Mabel decides to buy my niece and nephew.co.uk and has her name put on the back of it, it becomes a paedophile's charter. So we fought against it and said, and ultimately ICANN said, okay, in the UK then we'll compromise for the .coms that you have for businesses. They're grown-up people, their registered offices should be available to anybody through the net names lookup. But private individuals have an option to not have their details. They can have like a PO box type thing, or stay off the register, or whatever else you want to call it. So the wrong people can't get addresses that they shouldn't have. Now, if that was under the UN, you'd never get to a decision like that. But with the ICANN stroke net name system, you can get to it. And equally, as I said to you before, the Slovak body negotiated a situation whereby the only people that can have Slovak.sk are Slovaks.
I understand what you're saying.
The United Nations would never do it.
I can't rest my case. I can't rest my case that I think it is incredibly wrong for something as powerful as the internet to be under control of ultimately one country because they invented it. You started off by saying it was like Dyson.
I agree, but the point is, Lee, the Slovaks have got control of theirs.
Yeah.
The UK,
well, they are. We don't have an argument. That's giving it to the rest of the UN.
No. And the British have got their own system through net names. So there is no one organisation.
I bet French have.
They've got their own rules as well, yeah.
And Germans.
Yes. And I think
Portuguese.
The only reason for this is because Russia especially will know that if the internet goes under the control of the UN, there'll never be anything because they can't get to a decision globally, therefore nothing happens.
I think this is just, if this is true, and everybody owns their own internet anyway, right, we've just wasted 10 minutes of this programme talking about something that didn't matter.
No, but the Russians are the people that are pushing for it to go into the United Nations.
Yeah, of course they are, because they can see the sense in it. And I think it's something that needs looking at. I understand everything that you say, but there is a bit of partisanship, or the opposite, actually, on your side, because you don't like the UN.
On that happy note, we'll leave it, boys and girls. That was Postcard from Bobrat.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.